The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey everybody, this is Daryl Banks, co-creator of Green Lantern Kyle Rayner, and you're listening to the PVD Cast.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 364. I hope all is well with you, and thank you very much for checking out this installment of the PVD Cast. As I am recording this intro, the weather here in Columbus, Ohio has become very wicked. It was 55 degrees today, and now a cold front's moving through, and man, oh man, the wind is whipping around out there, so if you hear some odd noises in the background, I do apologize. It's Mother Nature at her worst. Well, that's just one instance of things kind of working against me with this episode. In a few moments, I'll tell you about another incident with episode 364, but you know what? Let's get into it. Let's talk about who is joining me on this edition. It is local film critic and co-host of the Film Bound podcast, Mr. Paul Markoff. He is back for his 12th appearance on the PVD cast. And once a year, usually at the beginning of the calendar year, I like to have Paul come on and we sit down and discuss the films that we saw for the previous year. And so this time we're going to sit down and talk about all those movies, the blockbusters, the indie flicks, the animated movies, the horror flicks, all of those things that we saw in 2022. I'm going to throw it out there that hopefully we do not spoil anything for you folks listening. If you want to know what movies we are going to be discussing, which ones made our lists, I would suggest going to the social media accounts for the PVD cast. I have posted a list there, and you know, I also in the episode try to give a little heads up that I might ruin something. We tried to keep it spoiler free, but you never know. You never know. Maybe we give out a little nugget of information that ruins a movie for somebody else, and we certainly do not want to do that. All right, I mentioned it just a few moments ago that there's going to be another problem with this episode, and you're going to hear that about halfway through the episode. Something happened to my microphone. I don't know if it became partly unplugged or what the issue was, but I am going to sound very different in the second half of this episode. Thankfully, the microphone that Paul was using, flawless. He sounds great. I sound a little bit like I'm in a tin can, and I tried to fix it the best that I could, and I do apologize to all the listeners who are going to hear this because I like to put out a quality product, and I don't think it meets my standards, but it is what it is. So nonetheless, please don't let that deter you from checking out the episode. We had a great time, Paul and I, talking about these fantastic movies. And before I get to my conversation with Paul, I need to let you know that this episode is brought to you by the fine folks at World's Greatest Comics. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. And I'm telling you, if you're in the Central Ohio area, you need to stop by and check out the store. They've got graphic novels, they've got toys, comic book supplies, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues, collectibles, single issues, graphic novels. I think I already said that. That's how much stuff that they have that the list is so long, I might repeat myself. So please stop on over to the store, or if you're not in the area, you can still check out the store by going over to the website, wgcomics.com, or you could check them out on their Facebook page at WG Comics. I mean, they're pretty active over on Facebook. So check them out. Say hello to the fine folks if you interact with them either online or in person. And again, I can't thank Jeff and the fine folks at World's Greatest enough for being a sponsor for a number of years. I really do appreciate it. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with Paul Markov as we talk about the movies of 2022. All right, ladies and gentlemen, getting ready to talk some movies with Paul Markov. Paul, how are you doing, man?
I'm good. Thanks for having me back.
Hey, you're quite welcome. I always look forward to our yearly get-together to talk about the movies of the previous year. Looking forward to talking about quite a few of these 2022 movies, but I think that I need to let the listeners know that hopefully we're not going to spoil anything for you, but you're going to have to just pay attention to the social media for the PVD cast. I'll be putting out the list like I normally do, you know, of what films we discuss so that, you know, if you are someone that maybe hasn't seen, say, Elvis, for an example, that maybe you are aware we're going to discuss it and talk about it. Maybe that'll help eliminate maybe the possibility of some spoilers. So, but Paul, before we get into that, how is Film Bound Pod? Is it still happening?
Well, it's in limbo right now.
Okay.
It still exists, but we haven't had anything new in quite some time.
Okay.
But hopefully we'll have some new content there soon enough.
Tell folks where they can check out. Maybe they're new and they want to check it out, even though there hasn't been a new episode. Where can they find it?
It's at filmboundpod.com.
Okay.
And if you just search Filmbound, you know, on any podcast service or that you utilize, it's on there.
Okay. There you go. All right, you ready to dive in?
Yeah, let's jump in.
Okay, I'm going to let you go ahead and start off. And you pick a movie, and we'll talk about it. And I, you know me, for those folks that are new to listening, I like to give a grade to the movies. You so much, not so much. But we'll discuss and see what we liked and disliked about them. Sounds
sure.
Good?
Sounds good.
All right, we'll go ahead and let you get going first.
I know you like comic book movies. This is one that is a DC one. I know. I think you're more of a Marvel man, right?
Yes, I am more of a Marvel man.
Okay. Well, let's start with the Batman.
Okay. I saw the Batman as well. What'd you think of it?
Extremely dark.
Yes.
I knew it was going to be dark going in. I apparently didn't do enough research in advance. And I took my 12-year-old daughter to go see it. Well, I think she might have actually been 11. She was 11 at the time. And I just saw it was PG-13 and it's the Batman. I knew it was darker, but she survived, but I probably, if I had done enough research, I probably wouldn't have taken her to see the Batman. I think it was pretty more tone and substance than, you know, even more so than violence and language.
Mm-hmm. Did she enjoy it or no? Was she like, eh?
No, I think she did enjoy it. I think in general, I guess as much as you can enjoy something as dark as that was at the age of 11, I think she enjoyed it. I think much like myself, she might have thought it was a little longer than it needed to be.
Mm-hmm.
But I still thought it was, you know, pretty compelling stuff and something new for a Batman film.
I thought I was in the middle of the road with the Batman because here, and I think it's an adage that we hear all the time, anyone can play Batman. You got to be able to play Bruce Wayne. And I really wasn't digging Pattinson's version of Bruce Wayne. I understand that they were going in a different route. They were going in a different, with a different tone. And so therefore he had to be more complicated and more, I don't know what the word is, like disheveled. And he just wasn't the Bruce Wayne that I know and love. And I felt like they could have kept that, but they could have also brought in some of the other personality traits of Bruce Wayne, like still make him be the suave, debonair playboy.
Yeah. Past Batmans were always more put together.
Yeah.
Right. They were always more polished.
Right.
That's not what Pattinson's Batman was.
Correct. And so I think that's the only thing that really bothered me. I really liked the story. I thought the story was compelling, as you said. Was it darker? Yes, but I thought it all worked together. I thought there were some good performances, but I gave it a C because I thought it was middle of the road. I didn't really think it was awful, but I didn't really rave and think it was great either.
I probably would have given it a pass. For grading.
Okay.
And I'm all right with that. I'd probably give it a B minus.
Okay. All right. So we're close there on that one. You know, now I don't know. I haven't read any of the scuttlebutt if there's going to be a sequel to this. I assume there will be, but is Pattinson signed up for multiple Batman projects?
No, I do not know. I would imagine with the success, though, of the Batman, they'll get him locked in or probably already had him locked in, I would imagine, for a second one.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to go ahead with the movie that I thought was the best movie of the year. And it stars someone that I'm not always a big fan of, but it was funny. It was poignant. It was outrageous. The unbearable weight of massive talent.
I'm glad you mentioned that. That's right up there for me.
Yeah, I give it an A. It was fantastic.
I enjoyed it. Yeah, it was in an age of meta, it was probably the most meta of all the meta films, right? I mean, you couldn't get much more.
That's great. That's right. Yeah, it was just, you know, I'm hit and miss with Nicolas Cage. A lot of his things I like, but there's some other stuff that's just wretched and I just don't dig it. But this, him playing kind of like the foil to himself at the beginning of the film and the story about he didn't get along and didn't connect with his daughter. And then you add in the money issues and his agent sending him down there to Mexico. Pablo Pascal did a fantastic job of being the very aloof drug kingpin. I loved it. I recommended it to a coworker who enjoyed it thoroughly as well. So yeah, overall, I think that was the best movie of the year.
I mean, I think it holds up on a film just on its own. Mm-hmm. Certainly, if you're a fan of Nicolas Cage, I'm a fan of Nicolas Cage. I mean, you're right. The guy makes so many movies, especially now,
yeah.
Which I'm pretty sure he's just making because he needs the paychecks. Mm-hmm. As you know, but the fact that he has such a good sense of humor with, you know, kind of his own, you know, personification.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, his own life events that he's had to endure, and they incorporate some of those things into the script. Incorporate a lot of the movies and obviously into the movie. So if you are a Nicolas Cage fan, you can appreciate it that much more. Mm-hmm. Or even if you're just knowledgeable about Nicolas Cage, you're going to enjoy it just as much. You brought up Pascal though. He's terrific. I think he's Cage's equal in this movie.
Yeah. Oh, I agree with you. Yes, absolutely. I agree with you. Yeah. Pablo Pascal has done, I mean, he's done some great work with The Mandalorian, but you don't get to really see him because he's in the getup. But I think that show is fantastic. And he is probably about, I'd say, 20% of the reason why that show is so successful and it works. And so to see him in this, as opposed to his role in Wonder Woman 1984, which was complete, utter garbage, it was nice to see him in a role that allowed him to be different. Allowed him to spread his wings. And yeah, I agree with you. He was on par with Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, and the film even is fairly suspenseful in a day and age where everything kind of seems fairly predictable and paint by numbers as far as the script is. And you know, I can see where this is coming a mile away. You know, you're kind of a little bit on pins and needles as to how this is going to turn out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Know, if the drug lord is really undoing, you know, their relationship and out, you know, for more, or, you know, is Cage going to flip them, or, you know, what's going on here? It's a really well put together film.
Mm-hmm. Well, back to you.
Just if we're going with quality and popularity this year.
Okay.
And I was surprised how much I enjoyed this film. All the critics enjoyed it.
I think you and I are in the same wavelength on this one.
All the people enjoyed it. I even watched the first movie again, and I'm like, you know what? The first movie's okay. Like, I don't think I'd even recommend the first movie. And then I went and watched Top Gun Maverick, and I'm like, wow, this is every bit as good as the critics and people were gushing over. This is the type of entertainment that people want, and if you give it to them, they will come again and again and again.
I agree with 120% with you on this. This movie had no business being as good as it was.
No.
It really didn't, because when I heard they were making it, which I think they started 2019, mid-2019, I think, or...
It was pre-COVID.
Pre-COVID, so. Correct, yes. And again, if you had said to me in 2019, John, you're going to go and watch Top Gun Maverick and you are going to love it, I would have probably laughed at you and been like, whatever. I mean, Top Gun was fine. I had nothing against the original film. It was fun. It was great, but... I'm like, listen, this is the era of Hollywood where they kind of haphazardly slap together sequels. This is going to be garbage. And again, I gave it an A-. I thought the end got a little bit hokey, but other than that, I thought it was well done. The story with, you know, Goose's kid and the romantic relationship, which had some legs to it, overall, it was amazing. It was absolutely amazing.
Everything about the sequel is better than the original, which was extremely popular.
Mm-hmm.
The relationship between Cruise and Connelly, I think, is significantly better than his relationship with McGillis in the first
film. Yes, I agree.
Even the major emotional, and I won't give it away, but the major emotional moment in the original doesn't hold up as well as the recollection of that moment.
Yeah.
Which is Goose's son plays something on the piano, which triggers a moment for Cruz. He hears it coming from the outside. And I was generally surprised. This is coming early in the movie, coming off a movie that I saw the original like a week before. Mm-hmm. I'm like, it's okay. Mm-hmm. The original talking, this is okay. It's okay. And that I was pulled in that much by that scene, I think tells you a little bit something about how significant that moment and effective that moment was in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
The action scenes, now granted they should be better because now they're dealing with technology that's, wow, is it 30 years?
Yeah,
no,
30
more,
years.
More than 30 years.
Well, because let's see, Top Gun was 85? That's great.
It was maybe 87, but.
Maybe 87, okay.
It's
close, 30 plus
it's
years.
Over 30 years ago.
Yeah.
So technologically, you know, it's everything's advanced with the flights and the fights and whatnot. But also, I also like how they keep things rather simple as to what the actual mission is for the people that he's training. Mm-hmm. And they don't, you can speculate, I suppose, who the enemy is, but it's almost irrelevant.
Right.
You know exactly how the mission's laid out. There's even a nice setup for it where they outline exactly what you're going to have to do. As part of the training, too, is supposedly how it's exactly supposed to work. I mean, this is really a tight film as far as how it's laid out, how it's executed, and how it can be understood by even simpletons like me.
Well, I said to many people, I said, if you were in Hollywood and you're like, let's make a sequel to an older movie, this is the blueprint to do it.
Yes.
Copy this. This is how you should do it. And, you know, Paul, I even enjoyed, even though this sounds hokey, I enjoyed Tom Cruise's little introduction. You know, thanks for sticking around and waiting for this movie, you know, and his little speech. That right out of the gates, I'm like, okay, I didn't anticipate that. But that's very classy. It threw me for a loop. And then we see everything in that movie, including even... I don't think this is a spoiler, but there was the scene with Val Kilmer that they had to kind of use some technology to pull that off. And I thought it went really, really well. Sometimes those CGI ADR doesn't always work so well, but I thought it worked really, really well for that scene.
Another thing, this is the first time it's occurred to me. The reason why the film is better in many ways is because Cruise is 30 plus years better an actor than he was in the original.
That's true.
Kilmer is as well. And, you know, everyone involved in it is more polished and seasoned as an actor, actress.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. So I'll go ahead and let you have another one. What else do you have on your list?
I mentioned before we hit the waves here or hit the cast that most movies now, and this would fall in line with the first, at least two of the first three movies we talked about. I said any more in theaters now because a lot of it just goes straight to streaming. Everything's either Marvel, big action movie, or horror movie. So I'll tap into one of the horror movies that I saw, and I saw Smile. I went in based on word of mouth and a few good critic reviews. And for the most part, I would say about two-thirds of the film works really well.
Okay.
It kind of caves in the end to kind of the supernatural finish, and the ending really doesn't play out very well. But up until that, it's a genuinely little creepy film that I can see why so many people enjoyed it.
Okay. I did not see it. And, in full disclosure, I'm not a huge horror fan, although there is one on my list that I watched. I'll talk about that next, actually, that film. I'm not a big horror fan, but, I have heard very good things about Smile from word of mouth as well, from friends who have seen it and whatnot. But I don't know. I'll be hard pressed to give it a watch. I mean, I'm just being honest. I just don't usually enjoy those type of films. It's not a genre that I dig. So, but
I think what works effectively well and why it worked for me is it's creepier than it is more a horror film. Although I would presume it got the R rating, I would assume, because of some of the gore with some of the deaths, which, to be honest, doesn't really work for me and doesn't tune me into the horror genre. But in general, and this is why the film's titled what it is those are the creepiest moments, is when these people have become possessed or overcome by whatever supernatural power is becoming them, and they just have the creepiest of smiles, and it works terrifically. But again, that's about two-thirds of the movie. The end...
falls apart.
Yeah, well, I don't know if it falls apart, but it definitely goes into probably the reason why you don't go watch horror movies.
No, I think I like Jaws. I feel like Jaws is a plausible thing that could happen. I feel like I liked Halloween because I think it's somewhat a plausible thing that could happen.
Just the first Halloween.
The first Halloween. Because yeah, No. Just the first one. Audition, which is a Japanese horror film. Again, yeah. there's a hint of that could really happen. You know. So for me, that's what it's got to be. Like I, as a kid, never got into Freddy Krueger because I stood there and go, a guy's going to come out of your nightmares and kill you. That could never happen. So why would I watch this movie?
The fear doesn't really work for you then.
No.
Because if you don't see it as plausible, how can it have any lasting fear on you?
Okay. Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, and I know I had friends that would rub it in my face. You're the pro wrestling guy. I know. I can suspend disbelief for Hulk Hogan, but I can't for Freddy Krueger or Jason Voorhees. You're right. I'm guilty as charged. Speaking of horror movies, Paul, I'm going to talk about one that I saw, and the only one that's on my list. I saw it right at the beginning of, I want to say, February of this year. It's the film called X.
Yeah, that's what I was curious about. Okay. There's a sequel. Is that the sequel to Pearl?
No. Pearl's a sequel to the X. Okay. All right, or to X, excuse me. I gave it a B-. Here's the thing that I did enjoy about it. And again, ladies and gentlemen, this is the plot, is that there's a group of individuals that are going to make an adult movie. And it's set back in the late 70s, and they decide to rent a home on a farm from this elderly couple to shoot said adult film. And then things kind of go bonkers and we get ourselves a body count because of, well, to be honest with you, I can't tell you why, because that was my big complaint about the movie, is there's no real motivation from these characters to go on this killing spree. Now, Paul, did you check it out or no?
No, I did not get to see it. That was one I got both actually X and Pearl on screener, and I just haven't had the time to get there. That and a number of others that I have to get to.
I give credit to the director, is that it's got a real kind of like 70s feel, like you're watching a movie that was made in the 70s. It's got that feel to it. I thought that the premise was interesting. But again, like the reasons for some of the actions of the villains really not explained real well. And I wasn't surprised maybe 5 or 6 months later when they said, oh, Pearl, it's the sequel to X. I'm like, yeah, well, okay, that makes sense, because the ending of the movie was so disjointed that I'm not surprised that they left it that way so they could have a sequel.
Honestly, most horror movies or any of the superhero, Marvel, DC, whatever, they always have the next step in mind when they get done shooting the first film, which can be good, but in general I think it's unfortunate, because I think films should be sold on their own. They should be packaged. You should, you can leave a film open-ended, but still not be thinking about the next film when you're shooting the one that you've just produced.
Correct. So, all right, back to you.
I'll pick another horror film, and one that I think it was the late 70s it's set in.
Okay.
It works fairly well. I'm probably B-, maybe C+. Walking out, I was probably B-, so I'm going to go B-, although I don't remember too much about it, but it works as a suspense thriller. It's called The Black Phone.
Oh, yeah. I've heard very good things about that, actually. I did not see it, but I heard very, very good things.
Yeah. So basically, there are child abductions that are occurring in this small Midwestern town, or at least it feels like a Midwestern town. And the lead character is kidnapped by, and I don't think I'm giving anything away because I think his name's in the credits, and it's in the trailer, is Ethan Hawke is the villain in the film.
Okay.
And kidnaps this boy, locks him in a basement of a suburban house, and there's a phone down there, which is supposedly dead, until it rings for the boy.
So. And it's a landline, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
So it's not 70, a cell phone. 70, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Not only is it a landline, it's not even cordless. So well, actually, the phone, I think his phone might be cordless because it's broke, but it's not intended to be cordless. But yeah, it works really well. And it sounds weird saying this, but I guess I'm getting to this age where a film from the 70s really is a period piece. So it has all the feels of, and you know, this is part of my childhood when I grew up in the late 70s, is it feels like the late 70s, and the behavior of the kids, that he interacts with at school, all of that is extremely well done. And I would say there's enough suspense to keep you engaged for the hour 45 runtime.
I'm going to go with one that has quite a bit of Oscar buzz surrounding it. I was curious to see it because of the subject matter, but All Quiet on the Western Front. Did you happen to catch this?
No.
Okay.
No, I did not.
I gave it a C, as it is, it's very long, and I feel at times it didn't need to be this long. Like, a lot of scenes seem to drag on after the point that they've made. I like that it probably is exactly how it was in World War One, just the mere misery of it, the psychological and physical damage that happens to these people. So I thought that was good. I gave it a C because I thought it was in the middle of the road. I just, you know, wasn't thrilled by it. Wasn't, you know, didn't think it was awful. But yeah, at almost 3 hours, I think it clocks in at 250 or something. It was a little long, and there were some times where I'm like, we could cut some of this, especially the politics side. I thought was because there's going to be a storyline where they're talking about trying to get a ceasefire with all the parties involved, you know, the Austrians and the Germans and whatnot. And so a lot of those scenes kind of seem to not really push the story forward. And that's one of the reasons why I was like, it's okay.
Was this a one you saw on streaming or this one?
Well, I watched it on Netflix. Yes. Okay. Although it did get released, I believe, to theaters as well. Okay. I think it like the week after, but okay. I watched it on Netflix. So
okay. I'll pick another prestige film.
Okay.
This one I thought was good, but not great. And we're recording this the evening after the Golden Globes.
Mm-hmm.
And it won for best drama. And it also won Steven Spielberg an award for best director, is The Fablemans.
Yes.
Which is a semi-autobiographical, I can't say it.
You know, autobiographical.
Yes, that's it. Tale of Steven Spielberg's passion and really developing into the director that he's become. Mm-hmm. And it tells his story as a young boy growing up and his artistic mom and his scientist dad and how they kind of move. They have a couple significant moves during his childhood based on his father moving up in the company in the corporate world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about kind of, you know, feeling a tie to your family or what is a sensible thing to do, which is what his father would have him do, or, you know,
follow
your heart and your passion. And a lot of it's balancing passion and family.
Okay.
Because, of course, a lot of people that get involved in the arts or anything for that matter that drives you professionally or artistically, whatnot, if you have a family and you, like, for instance, if you're Steven Spielberg, he was married and had children. You know, there are times I'm sure he wasn't with his family as much as he was on the film set directing all the things that we've grown to love.
Right, right.
And like I said, I thought it was good. I would give it a B.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not seeing outside of maybe people really appreciating it because you can, it's the same thing that drives them, the people that are voting for these awards. I don't think it reaches the level of greatness that many other Steven Spielberg's films have. But I enjoyed it a lot from kind of, in some ways, for lack of a better term, insider baseball look. Because I know a lot about Steven Spielberg, right?
Okay.
So to see that and, you know, the Hollywood makings of when he does, you know, get his foot in the door. It's pretty interesting.
I wanted to see it. I watched this past year, but it came out, I believe, in 2021. I saw Belfast, which is very similar, I believe, you know, because that was Kenneth Branagh's like tale about growing up in Belfast. And so and I thought it was OK, but I really wanted to see The Fablemans because I wanted to kind of be able to compare and contrast a little bit. So I still try to get that one watched, probably when it drops on Hulu or Netflix or whatever. But I was interested to see how The Fablemans would be.
Yeah. And there's some really nice moments. I shouldn't take away too much from Spielberg. I mean, you know, we're sitting in a room with Saving Private Ryan and Jurassic Park Caddy Corner, two of me the posters of. So I'm a huge Steven Spielberg fan. I don't think it is in the same ballpark as either of those two films.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some nice moments when it's detailing, you know, this science versus passion or family versus your passion that Spielberg does weave so well. I'm not really feeling maybe the greatness of the performances that mm-hmm. everyone else is finding in either Paul Dano or Michelle Williams' performance. They're fine, but I'm not I'm not on the same label wavelength as, you know, these are award-winning performances, but good but not great for me.
Well, I'm going to go with another big blockbuster that's, I don't know, I had mixed feelings about it. Elvis.
I did not see it. That's another one I got the screener for that I need to... Partially, it's probably because it's Baz Luhrmann in A General Outside of Australia, which is one of his least popular films, at least with the people. I'm not a Luhrmann fan.
So. I'm not a Luhrmann fan either. I'm going to say this, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but Tom Hanks is awful in this movie.
Yeah, that's been the buzz. They're like, why is he in it?
He is terrible in it. I could not believe it. And I've told people after I saw this movie over the summer, I was like, there's been some bad films that Tom Hanks has been in, but he's not the reason why they're bad.
Correct.
This, he's the reason why it's bad. At times, like, the accent changes, and you're like, wait, what? Colonel Tom Parker is now Australian? What? I mean, I know he's from another country, right? Switzerland or wherever he was from. I forget where. But, like, it changes all the time. On the positive note, I will say this. The gentleman that played Elvis, if I remember correctly, Aaron Butler, I believe is his name.
I think maybe that's right. His name. He on the heels of the Golden Globes, he won.
He won.
He won last night for Comedy or Music.
He did a fantastic job as Elvis. Like, I believed while I was watching this film, this is Elvis. Like, this is exactly what I would anticipate. And you know, I've seen one Elvis concert ever. And on TV one night, on a Saturday night when I was a kid, you know, it just happened to be on the UHF channel or whatnot. But I believe that is... You know, that is Elvis. So he did a fantastic job. Tom Hanks, not so much. I gave it a C+. I mean, it was middle of the road for me.
Slightly what percentage of the film is Hanks in, would you say? Or how integral is he to what's going on in the picture?
He's pretty integral. I'd say he's probably a good estimate. I'd say he's probably about 30-35% of the film.
Okay.
You know, he's got a substantial part to play in the tale that they tell of Elvis.
So is he probably the next most important character next to Elvis?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, because he plays somewhat of the antagonist. Somewhat of the antagonist to Elvis, yeah. Anyways, I was disappointed because I thought that it would probably be better than that. But, I mean, it is what it is.
Now, does Luhrmann pound you with his aesthetics of movie making? That's sort of... I always felt that way about at least two other films that were extremely popular and just didn't do it for me were William Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet and Moulin Rouge, probably to a greater extent. He tones that down in Australia. But something tells me with Elvis, with the subject that he's engaging in that.
Oh, that. And then I also hate, like, this is a movie that's set in the 1960s, but yet we have this cool pseudo like hip hop track that we're playing in the background. No,
okay.
No. Stop doing that. That it bothers me when he does it. There's some other people that do it too, but he's most notorious for it. And so it is the barrage of his cuts and color and whatnot. So it's vintage Luhrmann for sure.
I'll pick another big film. And one that I didn't think quite worked, much like the Batman, I would say is overly long. And I'm sure you've seen it. Black Panther, Wakanda Forever.
Believe it or not, I'm going to be completely honest. I just saw it like this weekend.
Oh, okay. That surprised me because you're the Marvel. I would bet on you seeing a Marvel movie more than me.
But I'm not making this up. Last Thursday or Friday, I'm like, oh, crap, man. I haven't seen Wakanda Forever. I know that this is going to be talked about with Paul. I need to go to the theater and see it. I can't wait because I know it's coming out January 20th on Disney Plus, but I'm like, I can't wait.
I will say you did the right thing by, one, doing it so we could talk about it on the podcast, and also because what positives come from it can be seen on the big screen.
Right, right.
So,
right,
I mean, it's a film, although I wouldn't recommend seeing it. I would say if you are going to see it, go see it on the big screen.
I gave it a B, and I think it got the B because I feel like the first 15 minutes was so well done explaining the tragedy, the real-life tragedy.
No, I thought that was...
Into the
story. Yeah, they did a good job. The screenwriting was good there. Job.
So it may have gotten a little extra bump on that. But overall, I thought the movie kind of just... Yeah, it... I didn't understand why Namor's people are all blue, because I'm like, Avatar's coming out, you know, or is out now. So why did you guys think that that was a good aesthetic to use? Yeah, it was okay. It just, there was something lacking to it.
Honestly, I think it's way too convoluted it is a comic book movie. It is, or any movie for that matter. I'm not sure why you have all of these different tribes. The different impact that's going on with them. You have the United States government is involved somehow.
Makes no sense. It shouldn't have even been in there. Yeah. Because I'm like, why are you wasting Martin Freeman and Julie Louis-Dreyfus?
Well, the answer is because we have to tie something from the Marvel Universe into the Black Panther film. Because, and granted, I'm sure there was probably one other character or some other superhero.
Well, Namor is actually a Fantastic Four villain.
Okay.
So there you go. There's a little tie into the Marvel Universe.
Okay. But I mean, that's, to me, part of the problem of what's going on with the universe is, although some films can still be enjoyed without knowing everything that's going on, sometimes I think it detracts from the film. Sometimes it distracts from the film. I just feel like they're trying to sell me within the confines of every film. I feel like they're trying to sell me something on the side. Mm-hmm. And that gets a little old for me.
Well, I'll say this. Well, for me, the other two Marvel movies that I saw, and I both gave them Bs because, I thought they were Thor, Love and Thunder, and Doctor Strange 2, and Into the Madness of the Multiverse, or whatever it's called. Both of them were fine. I liked Doctor Strange probably a little bit more than I liked Thor, Love and Thunder, because I just felt like Thor Ragnarok was so good. And then we get this, and I'm like, it wasn't in my wheelhouse. I didn't dig the whole story with, Valkyrie and all that jazz. Yeah, Doctor Strange 2, it was okay. I mean, it was all right. I think Sam Raimi tried to be a little too cutesy with Doctor Strange 2, and that kind of bugged me. But overall, I mean, again, I'm a Marvel guy, so I guess I'm always going to be a little bit biased on that.
I was going to say, some of your OKs on this podcast are getting Cs, while other OKs seem to be getting Bs.
Guilty is charged. Guilty. There's going to be one more that you're going to go, John, really? You're biased.
I don't know if it's, I'm having these illuminations while we're doing the podcast or whatnot. These revelations, I guess, is a better term. But I think it just hit me when you talk. I'm like, well, why didn't I go see either of those films?
Okay.
Why wasn't I? I mean, Black Panther, I think the original Black Panther, to me, that would probably be that, or maybe the first Tom Holland Spider-Man would be the top Marvel films within the universe.
Okay.
But in general, that's why I went to see Black Panther Wakanda Forever, because Black Panther was one of my favorites ever. So I'm
yeah,
I'm going to go see the sequel. The other ones, I enjoyed some of the Thors, and I enjoyed the original Doctor Strange. Yeah. And I like him as a character, Doctor Strange. But what I think what really occurred to me is, when I'm going to see one of these movies, I feel like I'm not seeing a whole. I'm not seeing it as a whole. I'm seeing it as a piece of the universe. It just seems like a fragment of everything else. And in order to maybe truly appreciate it, I have to watch
Ant-Man and the Avengers.
And more importantly, you have to go watch the TV series now, right?
Oh, yeah.
Do you have to see those to appreciate everything in it? So I'm like, if I'm not getting something as a whole, I'm not going to buy the whole package. I'm not going to go spend all my time watching every last Marvel thing that is produced, in television and movies. So I think that's why I haven't been drawn in probably since the last Avengers movie. I'm trying to think. No, I take that back. The last Spider-Man movie was the last one I was probably geared up to see. What was that? Spider-Man No Way Home.
No Way Home. Yeah. Correct. Yes.
I'm going to interrupt my conversation with Paul for just one moment to talk to you about World's Greatest Comics. They are your one-stop shop for all your comic book-related needs. They've got single issues, collections, graphic novels, toys, collectibles, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues. Don't believe me? We'll stop by the store and find out. The store is located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. But you can also check out the store online. WGComics.com is a website, and they're pretty active on their Facebook page. Just look for @WGComics.
Well, let's polish off the comic book movies here, because on my list as well is one that I had high hopes for, Black Adam. I had high hopes for it because I like Dwayne The Rock Johnson. I think he does a great job in action films. I thought it was so cool that Pierce Brosnan was going to be playing the character of Dr. Fate. I thought that was cool. Again, I thought Black Adam was okay. I gave it a B. I enjoyed it. It was fun. I didn't really think too much about it. But there were some things that, I don't know, some choices that I was like, I don't know if that was a good idea. Because, like, what I mean by it, and I'm trying not to spoil it, but spoiler alert here. It's like the classic horror movies, like Jason Voorhees. The antagonist is killed, but oh wait, no, he's not dead. He's coming back here in just 10 minutes. And that kind of soured me a little bit. I'm like, come on, that was so blatantly obvious that was going to happen.
So you have the greatest thing you love, wrestling with The Rock, and your greatest hate, which is the horror movie villain and not being realistic, battling each other in the same picture. And we know which one out, obviously, if it's getting a B.
Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, like I said, overall, I did think that The Rock did a very good job because Black Adam is a more, I guess you could say, darker character. He's a villain, actually. In the Shazam universe, he's a villain.
Okay.
So to have him kind of be that in-between, you know, where, you know, I'm going to, you know, capture these folks and I'm going to kill them. No, we shouldn't kill them. Well, I killed them. You know, that kind of thing, that kind of storyline I thought was interesting.
Now, that character wasn't in the original Shazam.
No, was correct.
It? Okay, I was going to say I don't remember that. No. I remember enjoying Shazam quite a bit.
Yeah, Shazam was fantastic. I really liked it. So, all right, back to you. What else do you have on your list?
Here's one that seems to be a bit of a critic's darling that, for whatever reason, although I enjoyed the tone and I enjoyed the mystery, it didn't end up to be anything more than what the obvious was, is Nope, with Daniel Kaluuya. And Jordan Peele is the director. And I was pretty geared up to watch this movie, too, because I really liked Peele's two previous films, one of which starred Daniel Kaluuya, is Get Out and Us. Mm-hmm. So I was pretty geared up to watch it. And he does a terrific job building, like I said, building the suspense. And one of the side stories is actually the best part of the film. I don't know if you saw it or not.
I showed up at a friend's house for a Halloween party and they were playing it. So I saw the last 25 minutes of it, which made no sense to me. And I'm like, well, you probably need to see the first half of the movie because I'm thinking that, because I was completely lost and I wasn't going to ask somebody, hey, what's going on here? And I didn't want to be that guy. but to me, it seemed very odd and I was totally baffled as to what was going on.
I mean, it is a little odd. All of his films are, but I think he's building, even with Nope, which I would probably give it a C+. I guess I went with extremely high hopes on the heels of Get Out and Us. Mm-hmm. And it just, for some reason, fell a little flat in the portion of the film that you saw, the last third, that didn't quite deliver on the mystery and suspense that they had built up during the first two thirds. Mm-hmm. But I would entertain because, you know, the tagline or is everything builds or everything essentially means something in the mm-hmm. film that mm-hmm. I'll allow the possibility that I'm missing something mm-hmm. and I would entertain watching it a second time.
You know what? I'll let you go ahead and double up. Do you have another one on your list?
The last, I guess, actually probably the last on recollection movie that I saw in the theater, saw some other things that appeared in the theater, but I ended up watching it either streaming or mm-hmm.
Same
screener.
Here. Same here.
I enjoyed this. I'm not sure what you would really qualify it as. I think it's a horror comedy, but it's also going to have some thriller elements in it. It's called The Menu.
I've not seen it, but again, another one that's gotten a lot of word of mouth.
Yeah.
For my friends. Yeah.
Yeah. I would classify, I mean, more than anything, I found it to be funny. Okay. So I would classify it first and foremost, probably as a comedy and then maybe a dark thriller and then probably a horror film. But it's basically about a couple that the young man is a big fan of this world renowned chef where they pick a remote destination and you essentially travel for the weekend to enjoy one meal. And I believe, if memory serves me straight, it's either 6 or 7 courses to the meal that, you know, are exquisitely done and kind of creatively presented. Mm-hmm. And of course, there's some substance involved in and depth involved with each course of the meal that you're taking. And all these pretentious people come to dine the one evening with this world-renowned chef, and then things aren't exactly as they appear.
Things go off the rails.
Yes.
Okay. well, like I said, it's gotten a lot of good reviews from my friends who've seen it, so I may have to add that to the list.
Yeah, and that's one that, I mean, it builds to suspense and it delivers in its final third. So I really enjoyed it.
I'm going to go with a film that I saw trailers for, I believe online, and I thought it sounded very, very intriguing. I'm going to go with a movie called Watcher, which starred, I believe it's pronounced McKay Monroe. It's a film about... McKay Monroe plays the character of Julia, and her husband is transferred from the United States, and he goes over to Romania. And so they're living, they're Americans, you know, fish out of water, you know, type of storyline. And much like Rear Window, Julia keeps seeing a man staring at her from across the street in the window. And she's the only one that sees, because every time she goes to get her husband, he's gone. You know, and then slowly but surely, while she's at the market, he shows up, and it's this kind of suspenseful Hitchcock light, we'll say that.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like a bit of a stalker, actually, if he's showing up where she's at.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was okay. I gave it a C. There was the ending, again, very cliched. You saw it coming. It was very, like, and I felt like, okay, you've got this cool little indie film going on here with all the suspense. And then the way it ends, it's like, that's not even suspenseful at all. That's exactly how I figured this movie would go. And it kind of was disappointing. But the performances from Miss Monroe, was fantastic. So
I'm going to pick one where the film itself is as you would put it, okay. But the last third, or the last scene or two, really delivers. And the performance from Brendan Fraser makes it worthwhile is the movie The Whale,
okay,
where he plays this, and I believe the technical term is morbidly obese. Mm-hmm. He is huge. And of course, it's more or less, and I think this is original work of art by writer-director. It is, because it was written and directed by Darren Aronofsky. Mm. So I believe it's an original, but it really could have served as like a stage play, because wow, you're more or less, it's set at this one man's house, which makes sense because at, I don't know what he's supposed to weigh. I mean, he has to easily be north of 400 pounds, maybe 500 pounds in the film, his character is, mm-hmm, that he can't really leave. Mm-hmm. So you get essentially the backstory as to why he's become this recluse and overweight. And he teaches an online class to college students, but that's his only really connection to the outside world, and another character that comes and more or less serves as his nurse. Mm-hmm. But it's more or less it's Fraser's film.
Okay.
And yeah. I think he keeps it going for the most part, even though I'm not sure it's quite successful for the majority of the film.
Okay.
But it really has an extremely powerful finish.
Okay.
That I think that carries it through.
Okay.
But the term they always use is tour de force. So, but I think in this instance, I think he's really good. I think he might be getting more credit because of some of the backstory that comes into it, knowing that he put on a lot of weight. Apparently, he didn't put on enough weight for Aronofsky because they have him wearing a 300-pound bodysuit.
Wow.
Yeah, so I can't imagine what kind of misery that was for Fraser carrying around that. So,
You know, speaking of a character that's looking to make connections and being, you know, more social and whatnot, as you mentioned, with The Whale. That's a theme of one of the movies I saw. It's a delightful little film called Brian and Charles. Brian is a very eclectic inventor, we'll say. And I believe the film takes place in Scotland, I believe, or maybe Ireland. I can't remember. I saw it a few months ago. But basically, Brian is very lonely, and he does not interact well with people, and so he creates his own robot, Charles. And it's about their relationship and how Charles helps actually Brian get out of his shell and actually talk to what ends up being his love interest. And then there's a neighborhood, you know, dirtbag, scumbag, thug that wants to, like, steal Charles because, you know, that's what he does. He's a jerk. But It's a delightful film. I really enjoyed it. I remember seeing it advertised in the spring, and then I watched it streaming on Peacock a few months ago. But I gave it a B. I really liked it. I think it gets predictable at the end how it's going to turn out. And again, I was like, could have done a different way. Could have kind of tied those ends together differently, and I think it would have made more of an impact. But yeah, overall, I liked it. It was fun.
I will pick another one from the streaming stash that I saw. It did show up in the theaters for about a week. I want to say it was around Thanksgiving, and then it released straight to Netflix. It was either Christmas Eve or the 23rd. Is Glass Onion, A Knives Out Mystery.
Okay.
Which I want
to see this because I really liked Knives Out. So I really want
to
see
it. I don't think you will be disappointed.
Okay.
Although I don't think the mystery is quite as good as Knives Out. I think in many ways this feels like even more of a satisfying picture.
Okay.
So, for instance, the whodunit portion,
mm-hmm.
I kind of figured out the whodunit pretty early on in the film. But seeing the way that the characters interact, it's a terrific cast. There's Craig, of course, reprises his role as the detective. And then Kate Hudson's in it. Edward Norton, Catherine Hahn, who honestly doesn't get as much time or juiciness in her role as I had wished. But really, the star of the picture is Johnson as the screenwriter and how everything comes to fruition in the end. And I mean, it really does have an explosive ending that really impacts, and you really feel satisfied by what transpires in the end, which to me is all you can really ask for in a suspense mystery.
Okay, I'm going to go with an indie film that actually I wanted to talk about here. I was glad to talk about it. It's actually an independent film from right here in Columbus, Ohio. It's a movie called Poser. Noah Dixon and Ori Sergev. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing the last name correctly, so I apologize. They're the directors. They are grads of Denison. And they set up shop in Columbus with a film company called Loose Films. And Poser is their first film. It basically follows a young woman who wants to start a podcast about the underground music scene in Columbus, Ohio. So you're going to see a lot of the local bands, you know, including Damn the Witch Siren, which is a predominant character. They are the predominant characters along with the main antagonist. I give it credit. Here, I've talked about being surprise endings, and, you know, being predictable and all this jazz. This film was done so well, Paul, that I overlooked the most obvious clue to how it was going to end. I overlooked it because I was enthralled by the tale. That when it happened, I'm like, I should have saw this. I should have saw this coming. I knew, go back to that scene. I knew something was up with that scene, and I should have, but I was so enthralled with the story and how the main character wants to be so badly in this underground scene. It was really good. I highly recommend it.
No, that's one that, because that came out early in 2022.
Yes.
And it showed up, I think, at the Gateway Film Center. It might have played at the Drexel or not. I don't recall. But that was one that I wanted to see based on the critical acclaim it was getting.
Mm-hmm.
And to your point, which, you know, trying to figure things out, when you're so engrossed in a film, you're not thinking, you know, a scene or two ahead. Unless you're watching a film that has you wanting to think about it, like a Knives Out, where it is a mystery and it's, you know, you're trying to figure out which character is doing what. It invites you to do that. But something like the M. Night Shyamalan films, his extremely successful ones, you're not picking up on things because he has you so engrossed in the moment. And it sounds like that's what Poser did.
Yeah, Poser did a great job. I gave it an A-. I really liked it. Yeah, kudos to those two directors. And I look forward to seeing what else they produce.
I'll take another indie film.
Okay.
It would be classified as an animated film, although much of it is live action. It's stop motion animation. It's called Marcel the Shell with Shoes On, and it is about a shell with shoes on. and this small community they're living in, it's a bed and breakfast. Mm-hmm. Her and her family and her grandma and her mom and dad and this whole community of other things in addition to small shells. That live in the community, and she wakes up one morning and something has happened and everyone's gone except for her and her grandma. And since it's at a bed and breakfast, there's someone else that's there. And he's a filmmaker. And he meets Marcel and then decides to document her story. And then once her story gets online, mm-hmm. it starts getting more hits and views. And she becomes essentially a star. And through her stardom, she hopes to find her family and the community that left her.
Okay. I've heard of that movie, but I've heard the title. I couldn't tell you a thing about it. So you educated me.
Yeah,
I had no idea what it was.
It's really heartwarming. It's charming. It's something that the whole family can watch. Jenny Slate, who was, I don't remember her character's name. She was on Parks and Recreation. She was John Raphael's sister on the show.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yes, I know who she's really funny. I didn't realize one of the memes or one of the gifs from Parks and Recreation is now a big TikTok. One of the scenes. But Jenny Slate's in that. Apparently the younger generation knows her from TikTok and that moment in Parks and Rec.
Okay.
But she is the voice of Marcel the Shell.
Oh, cool.
And she's wonderful. And based on her Parks and Recreation performance, I wouldn't have tagged her as being the title character in a, for lack of a better term. It really is kind of a kid's movie. But I guess maybe some of the subject matter or depth of what they're getting at in the themes mm-hmm. would resonate with anyone. And I think that's why adults can enjoy it too. Hustle actually is one of the better films that I saw this year. It's an Adam Sandler vehicle.
Okay.
And it's Adam Sandler doing something a little more dramatic, although there's some comedy in it.
Mm-hmm.
He plays a scout for the Philadelphia 76ers. That he's overseas and he's going from country to country over there in Europe trying to find the next great NBA superstar. And of course, this is all based on scouting reports that he's received and information he's got. And he stumbles across this guy playing when one of his recruits or whatever person that he's scouting out for some reason, he ditches Sandler for the night. Sandler's just going to go shoot hoops around the corner. He asks someone if there's a basketball court and he's going to get a basketball, go over there and shoot. And they're playing a pickup game. And one of the guys is lighting it up completely. And he's, I don't know if he's 7 foot. I think he's around 7 foot. And it's an actual NBA player
that is
in the film. And Sandler's going to try to take this guy that is normally a full-time construction worker, plays basketball, in the courtyard at night. He's going to try to bring him over and make him an NBA star.
I have never heard of this movie. I've never, ever heard about this. So
it is really good.
Okay.
So it's Sandler doing something that's not normally, although I think it is a Happy Madison production. Mm-hmm. I get the feeling that he was involved in the writing, directing, and outside of executive producing.
Okay.
But he's really good in it. Queen Latifah plays his wife.
Oh.
She's really good in it. They're good together in it.
Okay.
Like I wouldn't have been like, yeah, give me Adam Sandler and Queen Latifah as as a couple. But I'll tell you what, they're the one of the best couples I've seen in a movie in quite some time.
Okay.
They're terrific. And they have a daughter and his relationship with his daughter's good. Of course, he's traveling all over the place. So that creates some distance between him and his daughter. And it felt extremely authentic as their family unit. And it was extremely enjoyable as I don't want to say a standard sports film, but it has all the cliches that you would have in a sports film, but they dial it up just right in each of the moments that you're expecting it. It's very good. I'd highly recommend
it. And you said that was on Netflix?
Yes, Netflix. Okay.
Well, my second to last one, and again, this is the one that maybe got a little bit of a bump because I am a fan, Clerks 3.
I checked out at Clerks 2.
Okay.
Or did Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back? Did that come out after?
No, Clerks 2 would be after Jay and Silent Bob.
Okay, I checked out after Clerks 2. I don't even know if I knew there was a Clerks 3.
There's a Clerks 3.
Okay.
I gave it a B. Here's why. It's modeled after what has happened to Kevin Smith himself. I don't think I'm ruining anything here, but Randall has a heart attack and almost dies. And then it sets forth like this reflective and inspective message about fatality and mortality and friendship. And to be honest,
Clerks getting deep here.
It did. It was surprisingly deep. That was the thing. You got to get through the first 20 minutes of it. First 20 minutes, I was sitting on my couch going, okay, this is the same that we've seen. This is a retread. This is a retread because the first 20 minutes is very much like Clerks 2, Clerks. And it's like, but when that event happens to Randall, it shifts. And it actually, like I said, it does really, really well at diving into that subject. And the ending, I did not see coming. And the ending is poignant. It's good. It matches with the theme. And it was something that you're like, holy cow, I never expected to see that. So so I give it a B.
I was a big fan of the original Clerks.
Yes.
I did enjoy Mallrats, and I really like, I think Chasing Amy is Smith's finest work.
I agree wholeheartedly, 100% on that.
And then I think it comes
Dogma.
I would give Dogma a pass. Mm-hmm. So I guess up till, and then I think after Dogma, I don't know that he had anything that I would recommend that I saw, because he did Jay and Silent Bob Strikes Back.
Right.
And then did Clerks 2 come?
And then Clerks 2.
And then what was the one?
And then we did all the Red State, Walrus, or not.
See,
Walrus,
I didn't see.
Tusk, Yoga Hosers.
Didn't he do, maybe I'm completely off here. Did he do the film with Lopez? And maybe he didn't do the film.
Jersey Girl. Girl's in there too.
Okay. Which is not good. It's not garbage like some critics would say.
Yeah.
You know,
no, I agree.
But, you know.
I would say that if you liked Clerks and Clerks 2, Clerks 3, Paul, you might want to check out, because it is surprisingly, it is very different. It's still got the same jokes.
What if I liked Clerks but didn't like Clerks 2?
I'd be sitting at this table scratching my head going, oh crap, what do I say now?
No, but you have me intrigued by the fact that he's adding depth to the Clerks films, because...
Right.
I mean, Clerks 2, Mallrats, there's very little depth. They're just straight comedies. Right.
There's still plenty of that comedy. Still plenty of those fart jokes and everything else that you expect from Kevin Smith. But it's mixed in with this, you know, look at what happened.
If it's called Clerks 3, is it still about Clerks?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Yes, it is.
All right.
So, all right. I have one left, so I'm going to let you go ahead and take care of the next. You have three left?
I do have three left.
Okay. How about you go two, and then I'll go one, and then we'll close with you.
Okay. I'll go back to some kids films, although one is definitely for kids and one sort of for kids, but is a little darker and different. I should say different is probably a better way to phrase it. The first one is Disney Plus streaming Turning Red, which is about a girl. It's set in Asia, and I'm trying to sure what sets off this power, but she turns into a big red, I want to say cat. When she gets angry.
Oh, yes. Okay.
So she's trying to hide that from her classmates. And then at some point, of course, that goes out. And then they actually take advantage of her becoming the cat. And it is it is an outward version kind of Inside Out, where there everything was internalized and you were seeing the feelings inside this little girl and how they were manifested as characters. Mm-hmm. Here, it literally blows up. Right. When she gets angry and gets extremely emotional, and it works really well. I think trying to think of the last Pixar film, I believe is as good as Turning Red. I mean, you'd probably have to go back quite a ways. Okay. Heck, it might even be Toy Story 4. I'm trying to think if that's the last Pixar I think is as good as Turning Red, because I think Pixar has been turning out. They've been cranking out a lot and a lot of it's to a lesser degree.
Yeah. Lesser
quality.
Yeah. Yeah. Who stars in Turning Red?
You know, the names don't jump out right off the top of my head, to be honest. Although I would argue, for the most part, when you have films that I think work as well, especially with the characters and whatnot, that in many ways the voice talent meshes in so well with the characters that.
You know. Oh, okay. Sandra Oh was who I was thinking. I knew there was a big name.
That's about as big as it gets.
Yeah, because these are all individuals that I have not heard of.
James Hong is kind of a supporting character you've seen in some movies, but you know, wisely so. It's, you know, the voices are from Asian voice talent, so they're not big Hollywood names.
Right.
But it works really well, and you know, any kid, and I think adults again. This is, I don't know if I'd say, well, I guess it's upper tier Pixar, thanks to some of the average stuff or pretty good stuff. Typically, we're used to great stuff from Pixar, and this is really good. My other kids film, which, again, is a little darker and much weirder, is Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio.
okay.
Which, again, is a unique uniquely animated picture, which it's great to look at. Mm-hmm. So just from visuals, I would recommend it based on that. It was also interesting to see the variations that he takes from maybe not the original Pinocchio, but at least from the Pinocchio that I'm used to, the one mm-hmm. that, you know, grew up with a kid, the Disney version, the mm-hmm. Disney animated version. And it was good. Very, you know, probably a little deeper because it deals again with our own mortality and loss and overcoming the loss of a loved one. And they deal with it at from various characters in various stages. So okay. it works really well.
Well, my final one is the quote bad grade of this list. And it's probably something that no one would probably guess that I would have watched, let alone liked. All right, I'm going with the Netflix Christmas movie, Falling for Christmas. Now, you might say, I don't know what that is.
You're right. Sounds like something my wife might watch. Several movies my wife might watch.
It is the herald return of Lindsay Lohan to movies.
Oh, okay. Well, then I should have known that.
Yeah. My goodness, this is bad. I have never seen a performance that is so awesome in one scene and then totally lackluster in the very next scene. Lohan needs to maybe hang it up. She was god awful in this. Like I said, it was so inconsistent because my girlfriend and I were watching and I go, she's going, man, this is really bad acting. I'm like, yeah. And then the next scene, I looked at her and go, you know what? That was pretty good, actually. She's showing emotion in that. And then, oh, never mind. That's the next scene. She's just phoning it in. Not to mention that it's very cliched. It's the same formula for all of those holiday movies. And Lindsay Lohan, or Jack Wagner, by the way, who's a co-star. Bad props to Jack Wagner from General Hospital fame.
I remember him from the All I Need 80s pop star scene. Oh. Jack Wagner. That's why I was like, are we talking about the same Jack Wagner? And then you busted out the General Hospital. I'm like, yeah, you're talking about the same Jack. but I think All I Need, I think that might have made top five on the charts, John, back in the day.
Forgot about that.
I'm here for you. Obscure 80s musical notations.
All right. Go ahead and wrap it up, Paul.
Drastic turn here. I'm going to go back indie on a film which is very melancholy. It's pretty, maybe not necessarily hard-hitting. It's nostalgic, and it almost feels like a documentary. It's called After Sun. And it's she's probably in her 30s. A 30-year-old woman who is recollecting back about her childhood and one particular trip that she had with her father and kind of fun they had on the trip and also some of the battles that he was undergoing and trying to kind of push to the side to be a good parent.
Okay.
And it's all just recollection. I think maybe the 30-year-old character of her has maybe one or two lines in the film. So a lot of it is just a flashback. And like I said, it really has a documentary feel because you're just following along this father-daughter combo throughout the film and their vacation trip and her interaction with him and some other characters that she meets along the way. And it really has a real slice of life feel. It's very authentic. It's a good film. I hate to use the term experimental, but it definitely has the art house feel. But for anyone that's up for that type of film, I think it delivers on, it has some emotional resonance to it.
Was that streaming or was that in the theater?
I saw it on Screener. Okay. So it's probably showing, I don't know if it's still here. If it is still showing in the Central Ohio area, it would be playing at either probably Gateway Film Center, Drexel, or it might sneak in on one of the screens either at the Phoenix Theaters or the AMC Easton.
Okay. All right. Well, we tackled quite a bit of movie goodness. Not too many bad ones here.
No, that's good. At least if we're not seeing as many as we used to, at least we're going with quantity over quality. Quality over quantity. I can't even get it out right. I got thrown by that Jack Wagner reference a few minutes ago.
Well, is there anything else you wanted real quickly hype or anything, or tell folks where they can find you on the internet or anything like those?
Again, I'm at filmboundpod.com. We haven't had anything new. Hopefully we'll get something new in 2023. But if you haven't checked it out before, check it out. There's plenty of episodes to listen to.
All right, Paul. It's been fun, man.
Thanks again for having me.
You're quite welcome. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode. All right, ladies and gentlemen, there's my conversation with Paul Markoff talking about the movies that we viewed last year for 2022. And I hope that we didn't ruin any of these movies for you. I think we did a really good job of maintaining a spoiler-free environment. And thanks, Paul, for coming on. Really do appreciate it. Look forward to next year when we do this all over again. I will tell you, it is really storming out there. I hope that you can hear that as I'm recording this outro on a night in which the weather has gotten really wicked here in Columbus, Ohio. But nonetheless, let me tell you where you can get in touch with me if you maybe want to talk about the weather. I don't know. Maybe you want my 2 cents worth on how much I hate tornadoes. But anywho, you can contact me a variety of different ways. First, you can find me on Twitter. My personal Twitter handle is @PBDMVP. You can also shoot me an email if you like, johnorlando@pbdcast.com. And for those of you that listened to last week's edition, you know that I was complaining about my email not working properly. It's fixed. I don't know how I fixed it. I don't know. It just is working. So we're going to say victory for John on that one. But anyways, johnorlando@pbdcast.com, email address. And of course, you can leave me a message over on the Facebook and Instagram feeds. And that is @PVDcast. Maybe you want to let some folks know about where they can hear the PVDcast. Well, there's a bunch of different avenues for that. First off, you can go to PVDcast.com, the online home of yours truly, and listen to the episodes over there. But it's also available through all of those major podcasting outlets like, you know, iHeartRadio, Stitcher Radio, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, etc., etc. Just put PVDcast, sometimes you have to put my name after it, in the search bar, and you should be able to find it. And there's even a third and easier way to check out this podcast, and that is through the Facebook page. Every Wednesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I do a little live Facebook broadcast, so definitely check it out if you want an easy, quick way to hear the weekly episode. And you know what? If you do listen, I need you to do me a favor. If you're listening to the live Facebook broadcast, for an example, on a Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, like that video. It tells Facebook that you're watching and it's important for me. And if you're listening through some podcast app, please rate and review. Rating and reviewing helps me out in the algorithm. And of course, you might want to subscribe too so that you never miss an episode of this great podcast. All right, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, before the weather gets any more wicked over here in Columbus, I'm going to jump off. I want to thank you once again for checking out this episode, and I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy. Following has been a presentation of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2023.